This podcast episode is brought to you by Paleo Valley's Organic Extra Virgin Olive Oil. Now, we all know that many olive oils are cut with seed oils or that they are rancid, and so it's not always easiest to find a quality and properly sourced olive oil. Yes, in case you didn't know, many store-bought olive oils are diluted or blended, compromising both taste and quality, and may even cause rancidity. I'm really glad that Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil remains pure and unadulterated, sourced from a single organic valley in Greece. Paleo Valley ensures freshness and nutrient content by packaging their olive oil in dark glass bottles. At a certain point, I stopped using extra virgin olive oil, but once our practice started working with people with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, we started recommending it for the reduction of TGF-beta-1. It is an immune system marker that shows inflammation both for COVID-19, SIRS, and actually many other illnesses. So if your TGF-beta-1 is high, you may want to try incorporating a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Make sure to check it out. It comes in a 2-pack package. And remember, all Paleo Valley products are guaranteed with a money-back guarantee. Go to paleovalley.com/NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting companies that support this podcast. Hey guys, it's Judy from Nutrition with Judy. Thanks for joining me today. While you're here, please make sure to like and subscribe. If you're listening to this on podcast, please make sure to follow. My name is Judy Cho, and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing, and that often starts with the Carnivore Cures All Meat Elimination Diet. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Philip Meese. He is the founder of Carnivore Bar. It is a very high fat protein support that if you are traveling or you need a snack, it is a great product that is in the carnivore community. I believe the macros are about 80% fat and 20% protein. It is grass-fed, grass-finished beef, as well as tallow. And one thing I love is that if some of my clients or patients need to be in a ketogenic state, a carnivore bar is perfect because it's 80% fat. And the way that they process the meat, the fat does not cause most people loose stools. A lot of my patients that try to get to 80% fat with liquid fats, rendered fats, butter, eating more beef fat, they will get loose stools. But this bar does not do that. So that is another power of this product. I also just want to make clear that this podcast or YouTube episode is not sponsored. It is not sponsored by Carnivore Bar. I really like the product. I use it myself, and a lot of my clients use it. And it's really actually just to share Philip's story. Philip has been part of the military and talks about the exposures of toxins out there, as well as the nutrition that they give the soldiers. Philip also talks about why he uses the carnivore bar and why he actually needs it to sustain himself. We also talk about SIRS and how he's been recently diagnosed. I can say this openly or publicly because Philip has said it in the interview, but Philip is a patient of the Nutrition with Judy team. Philip is a creator of the Carnivore Bar and was a combat medic for the U.S. Army and served in Afghanistan. He launched Carnivore Bar as a Kickstarter in 2019 and has been supporting the carnivore community with this high-fat, meat-based, shelf-stable product. Philip has had so much healing with the carnivore diet. And then he talks about how when carnivore was not enough, and so he looked into chronic inflammatory response syndrome. This is a conversation that also talks about farmers and the truth and sobering truths about the demonization of meats and what this may mean for our future. It's a powerful conversation that I hope you listen to all the way through. Let's get right into the interview. Hi, Philip. Thank you so much for joining me today. I want to make sure that everyone knows that this is not advertised or sponsored. This is just me wanting to introduce Philip because I think he's an amazing person in the carnivore community. His health journey is amazing. And then I love his product just from a client perspective. People heal so much with using his bars, but if you can introduce yourself for the people that are watching and listening.
Hi, Judy. Thanks for having me on. My name is Philip Meese. I was a combat medic in Afghanistan. I really wanted a healthy food for the battlefield. Couldn't find it. I thought if I survived the trip, made it back, that I'd do something about it. So created the carnivore bar and here we are.
So what made you decide? I know that you use it specifically, but what is it about the carnivore bar that was better than, say, some of those other meal prep ready foods?
You know, for the community, I felt like we really needed something that was high fat,
right,
and animal based. You know, so in the keto space, there's lots of like tropical fats, coconut oil, avocado oil, or nut butters, but that doesn't really jive well with like the carnivore thesis of like trying to avoid anti-nutrients, as well as, you know, eat something that's ancestral. So our logo is a cave painting of an auroch, like a version of a cattle that's basically extinct. In the cave painting in Lascaux, France, they painted this beautiful bull. You know, we can only hypothesize why, but we think that they, you know, they painted all kinds of animals and foods and, you know, like stories of their conquest. No broccoli, no salad on the cave paintings, just these beautiful animals in this impressionistic style. And, you know, with that in mind, it's kind of this idea of like trying to get back to what humanity would have eaten.
Right.
And so that cave painting is kind of that idea of, you know, I went to Afghanistan, and in my trip to wishing there was a healthy food for the battlefield, I got terribly wrecked because there wasn't. And I paid the price.
Right.
So in conjunction with antimalarials, you know, broad spectrum antibiotics, I just got wiped out. I'm eating all this like glue, chock full of preservatives that don't stop working just because you put it on the inside of your body. And I can't digest a lick of it. So we're all getting, you know, just destroyed as far as our digestion health and well-being goes. And so I was really looking for what would be a healthy food. And, you know, I was thinking like, well, we need some sort of meat MRE. That was the word that me and my battle buddies were using. It's like, yeah, but what about all those like phytochemical nutrients, things, the antioxidants, you know, the whatever the stuff is in vegetables that we're not getting, you know, a meat MRE would be great. It'd be satisfying. Everybody loves meat, but then we'd be missing this whole picture. So we just kind of tabled the idea. It's like, well, yeah, it would be great if we could just have meat, but you know, you couldn't live off of it.
Right.
So fast forward into the present, 2018, I found the carnivore movement. I was like, oh, wow. So people are eating just meat. And I saw, you know, that's when I first discovered you, and I discovered a lot of the carnivores talking about nutrition and what it is in the food that you actually need. Like not just this generalized amorphous, it has what plants crave. You know, it's like those kind of idiocracy jokes of you have a slogan, but you don't have any actual measured metrics. And so I really was inspired by people like yourself, your infographics, like this is what is in meat. This is why it might be helpful for you. This is why it's been malaligned and it doesn't make sense to eat a plant, for example, with availability of like 6 or 7% of a nutrient that's the wrong form.
Right.
And then malaligned meat, which has like 200% of this vitamin that's desperately needed for human health. And so with those kind of myths, kind of, you know, the wool pulled out from my eyes, I was like, oh, wow. So this meat MRE idea is now viable again, because you can apparently do pretty well surviving off meat. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more expanding of why that may be not the end all be all of health journey discoveries. But it's a great starting point doing an elimination diet and realizing that nutritious fatty meat, red meat specifically, is extremely healthful. And so I reached back into the antiquity and I found pemmican, which is a Native American food that is just rendered beef fat and dried beef mixed together. And it's dried in such a way as to give it legendary shelf stability, like 50 plus years without adding any preservatives. And that is key because not only did I experience the negative effects of not being able to digest the food that survived to make it overseas, but because I couldn't digest it, I was just miserable. And so I needed something that was all meat, that didn't have any preservatives or junk in it. No chemicals, please. No plants to start with. And turns out it already exists. It's just, it was like a 300 year history of pemmican. And I'm sure it dates thousands of years before that. There, you know, the bag that I showed was, this is rawhide. You know, there's no cellophane, there's no plastic, there's no mylar, there's no refrigeration. So like shelf stability was like a big deal in antiquity. And so if we take these traditional foods, these ancestral wisdom, and reverse engineer what humans are supposed to eat with nutrient density in mind, it's like, well, why can't we make that a commercial product? And with the carnivore movement, I found a community that actually wanted that.
I know some of my most unwell clients use your bar either as an after meal snack because of the crunch, or they'll use it as a to-go meal because, like you said, it has really good fat to protein ratios and it's nutrient dense. We talked offline a lot about the nutrient density, and you said that it's difficult to meet the USDA nutrients or to compare them. Can you talk a little bit about your analysis? I know that you're not just sharing a bar, but you are very scientific in the efforts of, I want to make sure that we are keeping all the nutrients in this bar. And if you could talk a little bit about your third-party testing, as well as how difficult it is to compare to the USDA.
So, you know, it all started by seeing that beautiful graphic that we retweeted several times and kind of makes the rounds like every few months on Instagram and Twitter. And it's like, we try to give you credit every time, but it's such an iconic image of the ribeye. And then all of these theoretical values of nutrients that are in, you know, a standard portion of red meat. And it turns out that the science behind getting those values measured is going completely against the grain as far as every other kind of nutrient testing. So when I go to a lab, I've gone to 3 or 4 different labs. I wanted to find and have a measured value of exactly what the theoretical value says it should be. And then I wanted to prepare my pemmican in such a way as to, you know, make it so that you could survive off of it. That was the whole idea, is like, if I'm in Afghanistan again, you know, very unlikely, but like, God forbid, if I go back again, I don't want to be in the same situation. So right. If I have to rely on one food to make me whole, I want it to be as nutrient dense as possible. And I want those vitamins to be bioavailable as possible. And I don't want them to degrade over time. That's a lot of things that have to be lined up to work. And it was really difficult to find a lab that would do it in that way. I spent thousands of dollars trying to verify. And a lot of the tests were testing for either plant versions of the vitamins, so it wasn't detecting the right animal forms. And also it was detecting for the mineral form. So food is just like, we've gone down this 100, 200 year path of making like plastic, like nutrient devoid foods that they sprinkle in a little bit of minerals, and then they measure to see how much of those minerals are in the food. And it's like zero consideration to bioavailability. And the problem with bioavailability is that it is not only bioavailable to you, it is also bioavailable to microbes that break it down. So you're in this horrible place where if it's accessible to you, then it's not accessible. Where we have this kind of trade-off with, if you can imagine the most nutrient-dense food per gram, you're going to be something like fish roe, right? It was like pure DHA. And it's like that food is so incredibly perishable that like you can barely get it shipped to you before it's already spoiled.
Right.
Like if you've ever had like, I'm going to eat some fish roe to try to get my, you know, to my omegas, it's already oxidizing. So as soon as you harvest the meat, or as soon as you harvest the animal, as soon as you get the fish roe out, you already have to be very, very mindful of its exposure to oxygen and its water content. And so those are very, very relevant to pemmican creation, is that pemmican is basically super, super dry. Right. So we're trying to remove the moisture. And then we use this kind of, it's like a space-aged Mylar film. You know, back in the day when we used to eat chips, had chips, you know, they get stale really fast. If you leave a bowl out overnight, it's toast, and that's because it's oxidized. And so that same process that oxidizes our food, makes things stale, rancidifies or unravels those long chain fatty acids, are more devastating for polyunsaturated fats like the PUFAs. Mm-hmm. Grass-fed, grass-finished beef has high omega-3. So if you have higher omega-3 fatty acid content, you're in this bind. And that's why a lot of those oils, those fish oils that give you those fishy burps,
right,
have gotten into trouble in hot water, because it turns out they are sending off rancid oxidized fat, encapsulating so you couldn't taste it, and passing it off as good to go. it is incredibly difficult. And you pay a fortune to get all those omega-3 fatty acids that are actually in the bioavailable form. They're in the concentrations that they said they are. And then you can actually absorb them and eat them before they're gone bad. And so there's this aspirational challenge with these amazing graphics that you post on Instagram. And it's like, how do we get every single one of those vitamins? How do we get every single one of those minerals and nutrients at their peak bioavailability without letting them degrade? And so it definitely inspired me to try to do better and to try to, you know, to puzzle this and like, how do we accomplish this? And so that's kind of my mission is to basically make that real, measure it, show it, prove it, and then also make it shelf stable. Because I think that's the crux. If you can have that kind of nutrition in your pocket or at the end of the world or in a power outage, then we've really helped the carnivore community, you know, stay on this very perilous journey because I don't feel like a super stud or superhero. I feel like I'm a survivor, barely hanging on. And it's like, man, this meat diet thing is really, really transformative for my health. And I cannot let it go. And I cannot be without fatty red meat. So, you know, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that that never happens.
Hey guys, I'm excited to share that I'll be speaking at Hack Your Health by KetoCon May 31st through June 2nd. You can come by and say hi while I do a book signing or join me during the food addiction panel or the triumphs and troubleshooting on a carnivore diet panel on the main stage. Hack Your Health by KetoCon is the largest event in the US focused solely on the science and stories of tools to improve your health journey. As part of the conference, there are over 200 vendors and 70 speakers that include medical professionals, practitioners, coaches, and experts. I love this event because it's the largest community gathering of like-minded people. I guarantee you, you'll make at least one friend. Make sure to get your 3-day pass and use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your 3-day general admission pass. Go to hackyourhealth.com and get tickets today. It's an incredible experience you don't want to miss. And if you're at the conference, make sure to come by and say hello. Remember, use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your tickets. Yeah, I think it's really noble of you to really try to keep all the nutrition in the product. And it just shows you, though, all the people that are in our community where they're trying to measure on chronometer, if they're getting all the nutrition, it is that you will lose some nutrition by cooking your meats, especially the water soluble. And I get all those questions all the time of how much vitamin C is remaining in your meats or your liver. And it's a really difficult conversation, or it's a really difficult measurement to be had if we're not testing like the USDA does. So for one, I think it's really important to understand that nutrition is really hard to measure and that some nutrition will be lost. But I think unless you have to get into those nuances for the average person that's just eating meat, don't worry or sweat the small stuff when it comes to the measurements on chronometer. Even if you're eating plants and it says that it's filled your vitamin C, you don't know if it's really being bioavailable or absorbing, and especially if you don't have proper gut health. But I think also from a product perspective, we should be demanding these things that you are doing, because I really have a hard time believing that Kellogg's or these other brands are really doing that level of effort to make sure their nutrition is intact or the bioavailable version versus just the ones that you say they're sprinkling on.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, that's what they did with the MRE. That's my example, is like none of that was bioavailable, but it showed on a spreadsheet all of your vitamins and minerals. But yet I had 20-year-olds constipated, diarrhea, like they were getting, you know, old people kind of considerations. Okay. Like, I don't want to get too nitty gritty, but it was terrible. Like they were using pills to start and stop their digestion in defects, so to speak. Okay. And there's a real problem when you have to go outside the wire, you're wearing like 80 pounds of gear and you're going to go do some physical activity. And it's like, you can't accomplish digestive relief, or you can't stop. So there's this liability for us on a daily basis of like, just doc. And I was the combat medic. That's what they call us. It's like, doc, just make the problem go away. Just paper over it. And it's like, okay, but like, this is a lasting problem. We're here for a year and everyone's health just degrades. People aren't sleeping. People are getting weaker. They're getting fatter. They're not absorbing the nutrients in their food. So whatever their start point at the end of the year, you know, they're severely diminished. You know, we had a couple kidney stones and I had a lot of just routine boring stuff that I treated, small procedures, things like that. But, you know, more kidney stones than bullets it's a bad feeling. It's like, right. we are harming ourselves. It's like, the mission aside, if that's terrible, we can't do anything about that. You know, especially how it ended, it doesn't seem like it was the best thing for our troops to be doing in the first place. But all the politics aside, it's like, how can we make things less miserable? Let's not be hungry. Let's not induce digestive horror on our troops. And so that was kind of the idea with the carnivore bar. It's like, we need to stop creating these injuries from poor digestion through just careless administration of, you know, our resources, our medical practices. Malaria kills people.
Right.
So the prophylactics, I mean, that makes sense, but it needs to be thought through. It can't just be broadly thrown at soldiers. The soldiers who did best were the people who didn't take the doxycycline.
Wow.
And so I saw somebody, a positive for malaria, who got very close to death. And so there's no easy answer. It's like, oh, well, you know, the government's always wrong. It's like, this soldier, had they died of malaria when we have been prescribed an anti-malarial prophylactic, they would have gotten in huge trouble. It would have caused an international incident. And yet the soldiers right next to me who were not following the rules, they had better health outcomes and better physical performance and overall well-being. And here I am 10 years later, still fighting.
Right.
So there's the paradox of like, there's no easy answers. It's like, we need to think these things through, but you give someone dysbiosis, you feed them trash for a year, and then you set them loose with a month long of 4-day weekends every week, and you say, go drink, have fun. It's like, they are going to be messed up. And it's like, there's all sorts of things that I think that nutrition and dysbiosis is at the bottom of. This isn't the root cause of, which ties very well into what you're talking about with SIRS and the carnivore community. It's like, what is the thing at the bottom of the thing that's messing people up?
So can you, one, tell us what MRE stands for and tell us a little bit about that nutrition? I know you said there's a lot of plant-based stuff in there, and how your experience with that product and then some of the environmental toxins in Afghanistan.
Sure. So MRE is meal ready to eat. So the whole idea is that you're there fighting, accomplishing the mission, doing whatever we're there to do. We were mostly handing out wheat seed and burning drugs. So it was a weird time, but we tried to be helpful. And through that process, you know, we're burning like tons of marijuana, dump trucks full of marijuana, poppy to be made into heroin. And then also all kinds of munitions, mold, you know, deceased cadavers, like food waste. Burn pits are a terrible, terrible thing. And there's not exactly someone watching. You know, I think the official government statement is like, oh, nothing really terrible happened. But you know, while I was there, you know, someone found pages of a Quran that was burned. And that was a big, huge problem, which created a local incident. Probably no one remembers it now. It's 2012. You know, it's like anything and everything just bulldoze in and we burn it. Who knows what's in there? And if someone sees something that shouldn't be burned, then we get in trouble.
Right.
So hopefully the operational procedures don't look. But anything and everything's burning in this horrible burn pit. And then at the same time, there was an aeration, you know, to process human waste and calf. And it started outside the base. But as the base grew over the years, it enveloped the poupon, as we affectionately called it. And every ventilation system in the entire base had black mold, you know, readily apparent, visible in their ventilation. It's like a connex, like a metal building with kind of sort of heating and cooling system on it.
Okay.
And a fan. So it's a building, more or less. But it was this optimal condition for mold exposure, munitions, chemicals, goodness knows what, plastics, every kind of variation of rubber, metal, steel, every kind of manner of waste, cadavers of mostly like dead animals. Something would get hit and it's just like, you just don't look at it. But absolutely a petri dish for every possible toxin imaginable. And soldiers are exposed to all of this in conjunction with terrible food that is basically non-digestible. It's instant constipation if you eat it. There are army regulations that say you should not eat an MRE 21 days in a row.
Oh.
So not to malign the chefs, the army cooks who were doing a valiant effort with limited supplies, but the field rash is the problem. You know, it's not the cooks, it's the field ration. The field ration is built to be, you know, survive getting shoved off a helicopter and not explode. Right. It has all these like functional ways to protect against punctures. It has a little toilet paper, some matches, and two pieces of gum and food that's not edible. And it's that last part that I have a problem with.
It's crazy that, I mean, I just think of this from a holistic picture of, okay, so we are sending the best and the brightest men out there to protect our country, and we are making them sick. And so sick, not only with PTSD from all the stuff they see, but even living in these horrendous situations, and then their diet is poor, and then they're fed antibiotics for, you know, the risk reward scenarios. And it's just, I can't imagine these men coming back and being quote unquote normal or having vibrant health after you do that to someone. And it's just like, what is our country thinking in a sense of, I mean, the nutrition, is there, I'm guessing there's a dietitian out there, but I mean, it just has no logical sense. And when I was doing research on the new White House's nutrition recommendations, they have this whole arm that they're going to have the military eat, and it's going to be mostly plant-based. So they have these colors where for every food they offer, it's like green means it's a good one, yellow is cautionary, red it's you shouldn't really eat, and of course all the meat, all the fatty meat is red. And yet if you had a bagel, that would be green. And it's just, and it's, of course it's whole grains though, but it's just unfortunate because the people that need to be the healthiest are being recommended the worst diets. And I think even for all men, we are saying to eat less fatty meat when that's where you get your sex hormones and your testosterone. And it's just really unfortunate.
There are plenty of ladies downrange too. I mean,
That's true.
In asymmetric warfare, it's less segmented. And so there's every variety. So it's a terrible thing that we're putting people who, you know, their fitness, their ability to perform with their mind and their body, pay attention and focus, we're putting that in jeopardy for the sake of, you know, an ideology that isn't based on science, because that food that's recommended is terrible for you. And if you go out there operationally and you try it, it's bad. So the best we ever ate in Afghanistan is when we violated our rules and we ate goat and foot bread, affectionately named because the people literally made it with their feet. And it was very gross, but you would rather eat something that had local cuisine that was made by, you know, was made by people who have access to real food than something that was supplied by an organization that made you feel nutritionally trapped. Like you didn't have an option. So we would just take the MRE, throw away everything except for the maybe one or two things we wanted to attempt to eat, which is mostly candy. So we had cigarettes, we had candy, we had Rippets, which are like a off-brand energy drink.
Okay.
So we ate Rippets, cigarettes, candy, and then we just didn't sleep. So
No, it's wild. How many people would be out of commission for getting sick? Were there people that just couldn't be in duty because they would get sick from these foods, the environment?
I would call them walking wounded.
Okay.
So they were people who I had soldiers who hadn't slept for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And they did not get relief from gardening. So
you don't have the option. Wow.
No, there's no quitting. Now, it wouldn't be used, but technically your lieutenant could shoot you if you disobeyed an order. You know, it's one of those things where there's no quitting. There's no off time. Okay. There are times where you're not doing something, but at any moment they can say, get up, go. And you have to. So there's this helplessness feeling where you can't quit. You can't get away from your leadership. You can't do other things that you want to do. And you can't eat anything other than what's provided. So there is no other option.
Right.
So I had, for instance, I had jerky sent over in an attempt to get healthy food to the battlefield. And I chose something really natural, something very healthy, not laden with a bunch of preservatives, because I was starting to catch wind that maybe that was a problem. And because of the heat contractions of the desert, it spoiled.
Oh.
So the moisture in the meat, because it was jerky, it was not pemmican, condensated on the plastic bag, all in one side of the bag. And so with the heat contractions of the desert in the metal connex that it shipped overseas with, it accumulated that moisture and then soured the entire bag of jerky, a premium grass-fed, grass-finished jerky that I sent to Afghanistan with my own money, trying to gain some nutritional autonomy. And I was not able to accomplish it. You know, I ended up, meat was in such short supply that I had two iron-gutted privates in my platoon who went ahead and ate the sour jerky because they were that desperate for meat. But I couldn't stomach it. It's rancid. It's definitely spoiled. And they'd rather eat that than the MREs, if that tells you something.
Oh my gosh. That just breaks my heart. That's so sad. Let's pivot a little bit. I know you've been eating carnivore for a while, or mostly meat-based, and you've created this bar, and I think it helped some of my clientele that's some of the sickest. So thank you again for the product, and I like it just when we're going to go to KetoCon soon, and I totally plan on carrying it with me. So thank you for that. You have decided to consider chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or CIRS, and you know, we've tested. If you can talk a little bit about why you've decided to test and how you realize that maybe diet, I mean, it's so important. It's the foundation of, you need to fuel your body so that you even have proper nutrition. But from there, sometimes it's also the environment.
Yeah. So I have a very long and meandering health journey. It's hard to know where to jump in. But one of the things that brought me to carnivore, besides the food and the opportunity to provide this pemmican company, is that I was in the process of trying to dial in my diet. And I was paleo, keto, I was eating lots of vegetables, and I was drinking the occasional craft beer. Okay. And so I was just a little bit overweight all the time, just a little bit inflamed. And I was like, well, that's probably the beer, you know? Like, I mean, I'm no genius here, but like, probably that's the thing that's messing me up. So I had an opportunity. My cousin got very ill, and she needed a liver transplant. So you can either get it from cadaver, or someone who's alive can give part of the liver and be a living donor. And your liver grows back, everything's fine and dandy. So turns out I was a match. In a pursuit of meaning, I said, well, here, let me dial in my diet. I can do this. I can be sober and strict and hardcore. I have all this paleo knowledge. I just haven't executed it because I hadn't, you know, felt up to it. You know, I was after deployment. I didn't feel quite right, but I was like, you know, it'll be fine. So I said, here, I'll give my liver, cut out everything that I know is bad for me. Everything. Pounding vegetables day in, day out. And I was able to get healthy enough to give part of my liver. She's A-okay, good to go. So mission success, meaning I have at least not completely wasted my life. And something was still wrong. And I'm like, I'm not doing the crap beer. Something has to be an underlying issue here. Found carnivore, eliminated the vegetables, anxiety, malaise, all that not quite right went away. had a rush of exuberance, started a carnivore company, felt like $1 million. Then stress started to creep in because I'm now CEO of a business that I didn't know anything about, but I caught the bull by the tail and I'm holding on for dear life. And as my stress increased, I feel like something is not quite right. Again, I have the same feeling. It's like, okay, so if carnivore is ameliorating like 95% of my symptoms, but it's the stressful lifestyle that's kind of pushing me over. Things start to get better in the business. We start to do better. Something's still not right. And then I hear your talk about SIRS and I do the vision test. I fail. And then it's like, oh my gosh, like this would make sense of why some people have to be carnivore and other people don't. It's back to that origination of what is the underlying cause that's at the bottom that's causing all these people. Some people can eat crap and they're fine. Some soldiers were A-OK. Some soldiers stopped sleeping, you know, and then the statistics are, you know, 22 veterans kill themselves every day. What is making us so malaise and dysphoric and depressed about this experience that we've all had? It's like, and SIRS honestly made the most compelling sense. And so I tested and bam, there it was staring me right in the face.
Yeah, it's been a journey for me to even find SIRS. There's just like you said, if there's 22 people that you know that decide to not continue life, there was a subset of my clientele that are carnivore. So most people, if you listen to any of the carnivore content on YouTube, Instagram, whatever medium, there's enough information that you can get started and see how well you do. And it's the people that even after a few months, they're not getting fully better, that they'll start working with us. And so when we fine tune macros, gut health, you know, we just talked about how important gut health is and using some of the gut support, we see a lot of healing. But even then from there, there's a subset that still don't get better, or they get better for a little bit. And then fast forward a couple months, they're back to being sick. And it was this one client that decided to do a mold test. And so the standard mold test that typically people use in the functional space is a urine test. So I did that. They were high off the charts. So we did the standard protocol where you use the common binders that everyone knows, like the activated charcoal, the chlorella, et cetera, glutathione. And she wasn't getting better. And in fact, she was reacting. I'm just a very inquisitive person. And so I just thought there's got to be something else because it doesn't make sense that she's reacting this badly. And when I searched and searched, I found ran into chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And then I just fell into this deep, dark hole. And I realized that so many carnivores or people in the wellness space that had to find why maybe a certain food may be affecting them or why they're just not feeling well, that they have to use some type of modality that maybe they're actually suffering from SIRS. And so they're finding, maybe it's the hormones, maybe it's the thyroid, maybe it's the electrolyte imbalance or my mental health. And it's actually, they are all symptomologies of chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And so I think it makes sense that when, yes, if you're not a biohacker and it's like, I just want to live forever and I'm just going to try carnivore because it's cool. Other than those people, everyone else that's here because standard care has failed them. The medical system has failed them. All drugs don't really work. Even a diagnosis of autoimmune isn't fully fixing you. But when you are doing carnivore and you feel better, but not enough, that's when I think if you are honestly clean with the diet for a long period, maybe 6 months, maybe even a year, I think it's time to really consider SIRS because there is a reason you are not fully getting better. And I do not believe in the mantra of you just have to carnivore harder. It's that one seasoning you left in. It's the salt imbalances. It's the hormonal. Maybe you need to wake up with the light. And those things all help, but it is not the root cause. It is not because you left in coffee that everyone else is healing on carnivore and you are not.
Yeah. And that was another thing. I did a podcast with Dr. Chafee and, you know, he's super strict. And I definitely was like, yeah, I think I need to quit coffee because I did that for the first few years. You know, maybe it's oxalate, you know, maybe it's, you know, coffee is a source of oxalate. So, you know, that's messing me up. And I've quit that several months in now, and we're still not all the way there, but I've started on your protocol and I feel a lot better. And I realized that my sleep is not as good as I imagined it was.
Right.
The coffee is kind of a distortion. If you have SIRS, if you have this chronic inflammatory response, like you really want to avoid stimulants of any kind, caffeine, just because you're aggravating this kind of excitatory breaking down system, and you're never really resting and digesting. You know, you're activated in this way that I've had a horrible history with. Like one of the great ideas that the VA had after my malaise in 2012 was to put me on methylphenidate and put me on speed. And so the anxiety and all the other problems, PTSD, got way worse. Surprise, surprise. And I was unable to work out. And it was this like leaving that, going to keto, trying to figure everything out. And my journey had this like all these bumps in it that said, it's really the ability to rest and digest that you need to maximize. And carnivore is so anti-inflammatory. It reduces so many symptoms for so many people. But if you're still inflamed at the end of the day, just eating meat and drinking water, there might be something deeper.
I've been talking recently about a fish tank, right? So if we assume we're fish and we are eating the most nutrient-dense food for us, so like the steak for us in an instance, so we can make our bodies healthy. But if the water is bad, if the water quality is not good, you can only do so much for your body. And that's where I think the mistake with carnivore is that, yes, we should fuel our body with the most nutrient-dense foods that will make us the most resilient we could be mentally, physically. I fully agree with that. But when it comes to our environment, if the buildings we live in or the fish tank we're in that we are breathing and living in is toxic, you will only get so far, and you see it in the carnivore community.
And even your own ability to right the ship. It's like, right. If we follow the SIRS, you know, line of logic, it's like this one in four of us can't get back on track. It's right. Not that we can never get back on track. It's just we can't get there by ourselves. And so there's a genetic disposition to like, once you get derailed, and I got derailed with dysbiosis, and I did all these like tests, and I even did an RNA test on the different microbes, genetic, RNA, blah, blah, blah. I found out that I have a very active Acinetobacter baumannii, which has a nickname. Anytime a microbe has a nickname, it's super bad for you, because Arachibacter is what this microbe is. And it was like 67% of my microbiome before carnivore. And what that is antibiotic resistant bacteria that basically is an opportunistic pathogen. And so like, if I have this infection that I can't clear that carnivore suppresses, it's like, oh good. I'm treading water. I'm just above the water surface. And it's like any kind of stressor or a bad night's sleep or any kind of not having enough fat would derail me. You know, right. Part of the reason I created the carnivore bar was that I found that a high fat percentage. So like keto AF, Amber O'Hearn, kind of that, like make sure to keep that fat high, really helped me. And when I would go home and my mom would try to like help me out and cook me a sirloin and overcook it and not put any seasoning on it, like I asked, I felt awful. I felt terrible. And I felt like I was getting symptoms again, and my anxiety creeps up and I just feel unwell. And so then the carnivore bar in my backpack was to make sure I get that adequate fat level. So I eat the sirloin and I'm polite and I say, thank you. That's so sweet. You made an only meat thing for me. But being that I'm carnivore and that I'm only eating meat, I need some kind of energy or fuel source, because when my energy goes down, I hit this like crazy bonk and I just feel like garbage. So if I have that pemmican in my back pocket, you know, it's like someone can give me their jerkies, I can try new things, but then I go and I, you know, it's not a purse meat, but it's my backpack pemmican. And so that kept my symptoms at bay. And so I just don't go anywhere without it. And I think that one of the reasons that I need that high fat to suppress those symptoms is because I have this unresolved SIRS issue, that I'm always inflamed. If I have high fat, it suppresses it. Right. And I think there's a commonality. I know several people in the keto AF community who have had dysbiosis issues. It's his story to share, but Logical Links back in the day was really big on the keto AF. And he has a website that's keto AF. It documents his journey with dysbiosis. And he's not active in the community anymore, okay. But it's one of those things where it makes you wonder. If there isn't some kind of connection between that high fat and that underlying SIRS relationship, if you cannot go lean, if going lean hurts you, I think there's something to that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there are people that were carnivore and left saying that they needed the carbs, and I don't think they ever went high fat. And I think that was the model they needed to feel better. And I will say that some of those people have been diagnosed with SIRS. So it's just, again, it's this weird place of, is it the diet that's not working, or is it that you found a diet that is so clean? Yes, it will make you feel more electrolyte imbalances because now you're retaining less water, but it's only a subset of the people that feel the electrolyte imbalances. And if you have certain SIRS markers that are imbalanced, you will feel them forever. And carbs will be a band-aid because you're retaining more water. And so you're like, see, I don't have electrolyte imbalances, or you've just masked the ADH and osmolality that's imbalanced, but now you're so far removed from it again that you will never clean the fish tank.
Exactly. And when we did our labs, when I was low on ADH and I was shocked, I was surprised. I'm like, I'm not drinking anything. I'm not doing any carbs. It's like, but why am I low on ADH? It's like, well, if I had carbs, I'd probably feel a little better. Electrolyte wise.
Right.
No, that's not the root cause. That's not the real issue here. It has all these electrolyte effects, but it's this underlying inflammation that means that I need to constantly consume energy. Yes. And that constant is, consuming energy, it makes me realize and think about like my medic training and how metabolically demanding the immune system is. So if my immune system is just constantly fighting this epic battle that it cannot seem to win because of my underlying genetic predisposition to lose the war against chronic inflammation, I need to help out my immune system somehow, some way. And energy is a good first start. High fat, animal-based, low contaminants. In my case, no contaminants. I can't do spices. But that metabolic component, to this healing modality of the carnivore, the carnivore cure or this elimination diet to get us right. It's this lowering of inflammation. And then like you look around and see what's still messed up. And, for like 25% of us, there's something still not quite right. And I think you're definitely on to something with this.
I love that. No, I think it's good. And I thank you for sharing your story because it's so important where at a certain point, carnivore becomes a band-aid. So it's really good. Take out all the noise. We shouldn't be eating a ton of plants or processed foods or seed oils anyway. But at a certain point, if carnivore is not getting you to a level A of health, then you should look deeper because it's likely the water that you're living in or the home that you're living in. So I think it's so important. And it's oftentimes schools, buildings that are older. So hospitals and schools are notorious for mold. And I've been sharing more on social media, and then I'll get people that are in the military there where they're staying, there's just mold and they don't get it fixed and they have to stay in there. So it's a hard conversation, but I think if enough people talk about it, we can possibly change the way we're building homes and building infrastructure because Absolutely. We are slowly poisoning ourselves. And it doesn't even matter if you have SIRS or not. No one should be living around mold because this is the scariest part of it is if you think about what mold is intended for, it feeds off dead and then it allows for new to grow. So then if you're ingesting that or inhaling that, that's what it's doing to your body. It's breaking down stuff. And, right. But there's ways around it, even though it's not an easy illness.
I was just going to say and mold is certainly an easy thing to search for, but like just exposure. If you have been exposed to these things previously, you're not currently being exposed, but you've previously been exposed, you can't right the ship either. So it may not be something in your current life, but there are 50,000 chemicals that are, you know, cleared by the FDA as generally regarded as safe, meaning not demonstrated to be safe,
yes,
but like maybe safe. Well, you don't instantly die. And so for the average person, they can buffer that out. It's fine. But if you have SIRS and then you start going down this rabbit hole of all these snake oil, like health hack kind of things, I spent a fortune on buying a bed that didn't off-gas flame retardants, you know, EMF things, and all these other different stressors. And it didn't really solve any of the problems. I did all these kind of dietary things, all like my supplements, my cabinets are just full, the bursting of supplements that didn't really work for me. It's because the thing at the bottom that's messed up wasn't being addressed. These are all signs and symptoms of a chronic inflammatory process that, you know, I think we're still at the cusp of learning about. Yeah,
agreed. And I it'll be interesting as carnivore evolves and there's a subset that are not getting fully better with carnivore that they may, I mean, this is the most, I mean, it's really the ultimate elimination diet. Like how much more can you eliminate than just meat? And once you're just eating meat, which is the most anti-inflammatory, the nutrients are most bioavailable. And if that is not moving the needle enough, assuming you're eating the right macros, enough fat, if that isn't moving it enough, that's when I think environmental, and it might not just be SIRS. I mean, it could be heavy metals, it could be lime, but they can all fall under the umbrella of SIRS. But it's just something in the environment. If you're in the fish tank, if the water is not clean, you can only get so far.
Well, it stacks too. So, you know, if SIRS if I understand what you're saying, that is SIRS were relegated to only mold.
It's not, but yes.
Okay. Well, either way, it's like all of this stacks. It's like, it's the same fishbowl. It's like,
right.
All these things that are mild stressors that are generally regarded as safe may be safe for 75% of people. Yes. It's like, if you're the unlucky 1 in 4, then, you know, all bets are off. And because all bets are off on that safety issue, everything about our society, all building materials, clothing materials, like where you live, the air quality that you're around, how much vitamin D you need, and back to the ribeye. Like how much of these things do you need for your individualized health, given that you're, you know, your methylating is terrible and you're burning through this methyl donor 10 times faster than the regular populace. You need more of this, but don't go too high in vitamin A because you could get very sick because you can't clear it if you get too much. So there's all these cascading problems that I think you've done a great job of illustrating.
Well, thank you. I wanted to talk about your bar. I know that you're introducing some seasonings. I don't do bad with seasoning, so I'm kind of excited for you to introduce them. What was the logic behind that and what seasonings are you adding?
I eat an unsalted bar. So I control my electrolytes very carefully. I drink them in measured amounts in my electrolyte drink. So when I eat, I typically go with the unsalted, and that's what I can tolerate. Okay. But other people, when you give them a high fat, just meat bar, they're like, what is this? Like, why would you do this? You gave me a plain hamburger patty that's shelf stable. It's like, what's the deal here? And like, you get it to someone like Kelly Hogan, and she's just raves about it. They're like, the best pemmican ever. This is amazing. I wish this existed 12 years ago, because she's actually doing what she says she's doing. She's eating just meat. And so just meat is what she wants, and it's perfect. But the average ketovore, dirty carnivore, not SIRS patient who can eat, you know, whatever, but wants to be healthy and feels better eating less vegetable, they're animal based. They want something that tastes good. Right. And so I found a way to sneak in a little bit more animal based nutrition with Pluck. Pluck is an organ based seasoning. So the people who believe that nose to tail is important, if they want to complement, it's an organ blend. One of the reasons I like that is because it's not too high in any one organ, and it's a relatively small amount. So if you're deficient, you will feel it by eating Pluck. But if you are eating these all day, you're not going to get overloaded, because it's not like eating a bag of liver. It's not like eating 4 animals worth of pancreas. It's like, that's very unnatural kind of supplementation. It's like, It's just a broad mix of grass-fed, grass-finished organs, and it comes made by this amazing chef. His name is James.
Okay.
He makes it so that it tastes aromatic and good, and you can't taste the organs, which was key for if I'm going to have to betray my carnivore roots and add spices, I'm going to sneak a little bit more animal in there, sneak a little bit more nutrition in there to hopefully make it more broad and inclusive nutrition. So given that, we're doing a zesty garlic. Actually, I have a zesty garlic here. This is the new wrapper, and they're all going to be colored. Zesty garlic, which is zero carb. And then we're doing a honey barbecue, which has 7 grams of carbs. So the honey barbecue is spicy pluck plus all-purpose pluck. And then just a regular carnivore bar with a little bit of honey. So if you can do raw honey, didn't want to add sugar, anything like chemical, but raw honey, I know hunter-gatherers have eaten that. Some, yeah. Maybe 75% of us can eat raw honey. I can't eat it. And I can't eat the spices, which is so ironic. But trying to support and grow the business, scale up, make it as affordable as possible at a higher quality as possible. I know that the animal-based community really wants something that is high fat, that's animal, that isn't these tropical fats, that fits in line with the lower anti-nutrients profile, doesn't have the preservatives or chemicals, but has a little bit more flavor. So that's where I'm trying to compromise and meet my customers where they are and be reasonable, not be dogmatic. So it's grass-fed, grass-finished beef and grass-fed, grass-finished tallow with just a little bit of seasoning, organs, Redmond real salt. And we're going to showcase it in KetoCon and hopefully people like it.
I love it. I want to taste it there. I think that is one thing that people do want. It's most people. So if we're thinking SIRS, maybe that's 25% of the population, but everyone else can tolerate most seasoning. So if you see, even if you scroll through Instagram on a carnivore, the hashtag, you'll see most people use seasonings or they'll add a little bit of garlic. Right. So most people can actually tolerate it. If you're having gut dysbiosis, you probably can't tolerate alliums, nope, like the garlic and onions, but the goal is to heal, right? So the goal is that you should be able to if you want to. So that's the difference. So I normally don't eat garlic and onions just because I don't like the flavor too much, but I can have it if it's on the meat. I don't have to say, oh, I can't eat that meat. It will kill me. I can eat it. It's just a preference thing. So that's the difference. And that's where we ideally want to get to people. And it's smart where you're using organs because, you know, I talk about the vitamin A stuff, but just having the sprinkle still gives a little bit more assurance that there's a little bit more nutrition and you're not doing it in the USDA mineral way that is not bioavailable. So it's really smart. So if anything, if people, because I have clients that cannot eat a lot in a sitting or in a day. And so if they're eating carnivore bar, then you're adding a little bit more organs to give a little extra kick in nutrition.
Exactly.
And maybe if they can tolerate the seasonings, I mean, that's pretty powerful. So I think it's an amazing thing. And I definitely want to try it.
Well, thanks. And you know, the idea was also for soldiers. Like my original mission is like healthy food for the battlefield. It's like, I might be a special canary that is super fragile, but a lot of the soldiers are not. I've seen them eat terrible things and survive, maybe with degraded health, but the raw honey also adds to shelf stability. So honey is antimicrobial.
Right.
So it was the right compromise to make. I know people very vehemently, Dr. Chafee, you know, gave me a number on adding carbs, but if you are metabolically healthy and you can tolerate it and you are very, very active, it doesn't seem like there's much negative there. If you don't have SIRS, if you can handle those carbs, 7 grams of carbs, you'd have to eat a lot of carnivore bars to get out of ketosis because they're high fat, they're 400 calories. So it's a very nutrient dense food. So the idea was something you could eat that you'd get full before you got out of ketosis on. So that soldier, I'm thinking about eating nothing but carnivore bars in the foxhole somewhere. You know, if he eats the honey one, 7 grams of carbs per dose, he eats 3 or 4, he's still in ketosis, you know, but maybe a spoonful of honey makes the medicine go down. Well, you're getting that red meat, you're getting that L-carnitine, you're getting all those fatty acids shuttled in for beta oxidation. Right. You're getting all those fat soluble nutrients that are so hard to get to the battlefield. A little bit of honey, a little bit of spices, broad spectrum of organs added just to cover our bases. The hope and the dream is that to make that soldier out there in the foxhole is slightly less miserable.
That's amazing. I would love that. I mean, that would be amazing to see as it just becomes more. Do you have people in the military that you could even possibly pitch it to?
I have lots of people in the military who are interested in this.
Oh, but that's awesome.
It is, you know, to put it in perspective, a meat plant, like a full blown out meat plant that I would need to do in order to sell to the U.S. Army.
Oh, right.
Just came, it's like $200 million just came to Colombia. Swift Meats, a subsidiary of JBS, did a Italian meat company in Colombia, $200 million. And, you know, that is the kind of infrastructure you need to build a meat plant. So with us being started as a Kickstarter, it's very much a passion project, carnivores for carnivores, you know, in the community. And our customers, a lot of them use your code and are fans of your show. They keep us afloat. You know, they're willing to pay for the R&D, for the development, for us to build out, because there's nothing else like it. And if you're sick and you want high quality food, you know, we're in a world right now that's very, very anti-meat. Right. And if you're like me and you're hanging on by your fingernails, like, no, man, I really need this. Like, I can't be, you know, it's beyond politics. For us, it's survival. Right. And so the community has made us possible in the beginning with the Kickstarter and has kept us afloat throughout the process. So I appreciate them from the bottom of my heart. And that's why I'm adding a new flavor. As people broaden their diet, I am trying to stay with the community, give them the version of the carnivore bar they want, and therefore fund the version of the carnivore bar I need.
Right. No, that's powerful. And I mean, you have different varieties. So if people can't tolerate the ones with seasonings, there's ones that are just plain, and there's salted and unsalted as well.
Exactly.
When we talked last time, you mentioned that the herd size is shrinking. And so I just wanted to really touch on the importance of supporting our farmers, the average age of a farmer, and just, you know, the sobering conversation of, you know, what's at stake with our meat.
This is something that Sean Baker talks about a lot too, this anti-meat agenda, this WHO kind of villainization of, you know, climate change is a problem. So therefore, cow burps and cow farts are ruining the environment. So do your part to eat less meat.
Right.
And again, this comes back to the survival situation where it's like, well, that's a death sentence for me. And so even if it were true, I would have to say, like, well, we got to figure out a different way to solve the problem. But then that gets into the nitty gritty of the biochemistry and the, you know, biogenic methane cycle of are cows really bad for the planet? It's like, no, it's methane neutral. The methane is broken down into CO2 and sequestered by regenerative agriculture.
Right.
So there's that really important kind of, well, it's lies. So that's a starter, but also, you know, it's kind of a deflection against this war on sustainable raised food, which is really, really detrimental to people who depend on high quality food and being able to have that food accessible. The age of the average rancher I mentioned was like 65 and climbing, because there aren't enough young ranchers interested in producing healthy food, which for us starts with animal, right, but also can extend to like permaculture and non-inflammatory or less inflammatory vegetables, root vegetables, different things like that, that are raised in healthy soil. But the soil is made healthy by ruminant agriculture. Right. So ruminants sequester the carbon and the nitrogen and the thanatropes, fix that nitrogen and create vitamin-rich food. But you cannot create vitamin-rich food, nutrients, if you don't have healthy soil.
Right.
So it's very circular, and nature is that way. It's like you can't have one piece of the pie, one piece of the cycle, and not have all the rest. You need the complete ecosystem. And so if humans want to continue, which sounds dramatic, but we need healthy soil to create healthy food. Whatever you choose that food to be, it's going to come from healthy soil, and healthy soil needs those ruminants. So just an ecological observation is that as we become numerous, 8 billion people, you know, people will say things like, well, you can't feed everyone a carnivore diet.
Right.
And that's not true, because you can only feed everyone on the planet a carnivore diet, because if humans are mostly carnivorous as in they eat 70% of their calories from animal-based products in a healthy human, then we're basically just not feeding all the humans that we're placating with empty carbs. And again, this is another weird part of my story, but I was actually a missionary kid. I went overseas as a child and I saw nutritional stunting. I saw rickets. I saw people living in the sewers, just devoid of nutrition. And I saw firsthand in the streets of Beijing, like what nutrition or lack of access to nutrition does to the human body. And I saw that as a child. And my counselor says that's a little bit of trauma, but you know, but it kind of focuses things. Having been to war,
right,
and experienced a lack of health, having gotten sick and experienced a lack of health, and having this starting point of you know, trying to provide medicine. My dad was a doctor,
mm-hmm,
trying to help do what he could in this post-Soviet kind of collapse in the 90s. And there we are trying to help. We're seeing all these nutrition deficiencies, but yet we're so unarmed with what is actual nutrition. You know, this was the age of margarine, of low fat, of, you know, whole grains, heart healthy grains. We're so ill-equipped to deal with the problems we're seeing. And when we see food aid around the world, we're sending, you know, bags of rice, we're sending corn, we're sending just nutritionally void products that make American farmers wealthy. And so you get this war on meat and war on nutrition effectively. And you see how we have treated other countries in need with this empty carb nonsense. And then you kind of hear the same rhetoric being applied to us. It's like, well, we need to do our part. We need to eat less meat. We need to eat more of these cereal grains. For me, it provokes a sense of unease as a carnivore. And I try not to be like too like hyperbolic, or I don't want to use fear to like sell my product, because I think that's evil and horrible. Especially, you know, during the pandemic, I was like, you know, I'm not, that's not going to be me. That's not going to be my marketing. I hate using fear as a motive, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't have any. Because for me, to be without meat, to be without fatty red meat, is, I feel, a death sentence. I may be wrong, but like, given the labs that I've gotten and the data that I have, that's how I feel about it. And so I want to provide this, not only for myself, this hemagen, not only for myself, but for anybody who needs it, anybody who's stuck in a hospital, eating institutionalized food that's made with this plant-based mandate, prisoners, soldiers, people who are stuck in a hospital, they are all getting food-like substance that is not nutritious.
Right.
And to me, that really hurts me. That hurts me right deep in my core. It's like, I want to provide a food that is a last-ditch option, something that you can put in a backpack, that you can bring into a hospital, make sure that you're getting at least some nutrition, so that you're not at the mercy of a bureaucracy that is increasingly making these terrible mistakes.
Yeah, I used to volunteer at our food pantry. So they have a pretty big one in Texas, and all the foods came in. I mean, there was literally no meat, and it was pretty much all the plants, vegetables. And it's just unfortunate, because the people that come then to get food because they're, you know, they don't have enough money, it's just, there's no meat in it. And once in a while I would see some canned meat, but generally speaking, it was all carbohydrates. And it's just, then those same people will be sick, and then they will need the medication. And it's just this feedback loop that's so unhealthy for anyone. And they're the ones that also struggle with mental health. I mean, I was plant-based for 12 years and it ruined my mental health. And I never struggle with mental health if I'm eating fatty meat. So it's just this, it sounds so simple, but it's so important that, again, if we go back to the fish analogy, we have to first make sure that our what we're fueling ourselves with is the best food. And for almost everyone, I talk about all the different elimination diets, but every elimination diet, and I don't consider vegan an elimination diet, but every single one that has a modality to heal something in the human body that's broken, they always have meat at the very strictest, stringent level. And so if we understand that, then we know that meat is absolutely required, because all the different elimination diets, they just remove certain plants. And it's just, well, why don't we just remove all plants for a period and you figure out what balance of plants you want to add back? But for us to then say, no, plant-based is the way to eat. If you look at just the literature, if people just took a second and actually looked at the literature, it's not there. We never ate plant-based. And it's just so horrible and unfortunate.
And you look at the rationale between researchers of why certain chemicals are awesome that come from plants. And it's unanimously, it's hormetic effect. Mm-hmm. It's like, unpack that. You're saying it's inflammatory.
Right.
So you're telling me as a researcher into plant chemicals that plant chemicals are inflammatory, and that is why you like them. So, okay, like it's like a workout, right? So you eat a vegetable, it's like a workout, then you have a net positive. Right, for the hormetic effect. One of my favorites is sulforaphane. I used to be a huge fan of Dr. Rhonda Patrick before
broccoli
she
sprouts.
Kind of turned. Yeah, she turned on the carnivores and I was like, oh, dang, I loved her research, but I was trying to grow my own broccoli sprouts for sulforaphane because I was trying to, like, I'm deep into this health hacking thing and the process for it. And she walks us through it. It is basically raising it to 100 degrees and then gently breaking the broccoli sprouts. So you have to mechanically disturb. You cannot blend the broccoli sprouts. You have to mechanically disturb the broccoli sprouts at about body temperature. And that's when peak sulforaphane is released. And unironically, those are the instructions and I'm dutifully following them. And I have my thermometer and I'm checking this out. And then later I hear about the carnivore movement. I'm like, oh, that's mastication. That's an herbivore preying on broccoli sprouts. And that's what maximizes this toxin, which is inflammatory. And it's like, now that's not like scientific, but that as a story, as a narrative, as a hypothesis, it makes so much more sense. Plant defense chemical is activating upon gently being broken apart at body temperature. And it's like, that's the max release of this toxin so that you will stop eating it. So you'll get sick and stop eating it.
Right.
And there's so many plants like that between nicotine and caffeine and which are like central nervous system disruptants at a high volume if you're above. And, you know, we think they're kind of fun. It's like, but what is the plant creating them for? It's to decrease predation. It's not to entertain us. So you start thinking on those lines of like, what makes sense? And it's just like eating plants doesn't.
I give an example in Carnivore Cure about blueberries and people got so upset that I picked on blueberries, but right. So blueberries are not rich in antioxidants. I know people think that it's a byproduct of the hormetic effect. So blueberries are actually toxic for the human body. But because it's toxic, you release inside your body glutathione. Exactly. And that glutathione releases antioxidants within your body. So blueberries, the poison in it, stimulates your body to release antioxidants. And the hormetic effects, there's more positive, more antioxidants released than there are toxins in the blueberry. And that's why it becomes a net benefit. But in the argument of the book, I say, or you just don't eat any of the blueberries and have any of these, the oxidized stuff in your system that you don't need as many antioxidants. And I literally list out several things, but it's this logic that I think most people don't know what I just said. Like most people think, No, blueberries are filled with antioxidants. They literally have no antioxidants. They are
exactly,
they stimulate it in your body because they are a low dose harm. And
right. And so I was thinking about adding it to my pemmican. I was like, wait a second, why? You know, what vitamin, what nutrient, what mineral does it have? It's like, it has all these inflammatory compounds. It's like, why don't I just leave them out?
Right. And I think it's it's been so pervasive to talk about antioxidants and phytochemicals. And it's just, if you were to look deeper, it's the science is nuanced about those. Even with too many antioxidants, they become pro-oxidants. So they actually facilitate inflammation. So it's just these nuances that are not fully shared, but they're not difficult to find if you actually start looking into the science. And it's just unfortunate because there is a narrative, right? That's why I went to UC Berkeley and plant-based was king and I totally fell into it. It's a smart school and most people were plant-based and I totally believed it. And it riddled me with depression, anxiety, ended up landing in the mental hospital.
Yeah, and your story is so crazy.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I guess thank you, but it's, but I got so mad because I was so lied to that I refused. And so I wanted to share a truth and that's why I'm here. And your illness has helped create a product that is missing in the market for people that actually really need it. So it's these hardships that actually bring good to the world. So I think it's all purposeful. So I'm okay with it. But
yeah, I'm so glad we survived. It's just like,
no, it's true.
It's just, we were both set up for such failure. And it's amazing that our society allows that to happen on a regular basis.
It's because everyone's sick and tired. So you go to work and you're in a job you don't like, and then you're eating all this junky food, trying to just stimulate your nervous system to stay afloat, right? So from the sugar crashes, then you need coffee, you stimulate yourself with sugar and caffeine, and then you get home, the kids are running around, it's really stressful. You're trying to cook dinner and try to be the best, but then you're cooking all these different processed foods or heating it up. And then you feel unwell and now you're stimulated with the caffeine. So then you drink wine at night to try to hamper down everything, but it's a vicious cycle that does not allow you. Alcohol does, it will let you crash, but it does not give you restorative sleep. And you need that to function the next day. And so it's just this vicious cycle. And so who has time to then think about climate change other than, okay, so they say eat a little less meat. Okay, I could do that. That's easy. And it makes so much sense to follow the narrative when you're sick and tired.
And that's what I'm afraid of. And that's why I think that investing in meat is important. And
right. Yeah. So that's what, I mean, that's why I support local farmers. I think it's so important just to have that network and support people. So there's less of a middleman taking some of the money from the farmers. I think it is important. I mean, I have young children. So the selfish side of me is I want the world to still be relatively healthy and not indoctrinated as much so that they have meat, that they're not the weirdos looking for meat because there's no one else around that's eating meat.
Yeah. It's, I've seen that you put the carnivore bar in like lunch meat.
Oh, yes, lunch food.
Yeah. It's like, we really appreciate that shout out. But it's exactly the problem is that they need that healthy food in school, you know, to focus and to learn and to try to build their brains. Like if we're feeding them crap processed food, like how are they going to achieve that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very sobering conversation, but there's hope. Like that's the whole thing,
yeah.
Whether it's SIRS, whether it's the meat.
We're making progress.
Yeah. I think it's important. The one beauty of social media is that we can get information spread faster. And it is so important to talk about the importance of meat and push back against whatever narrative it's out there because people in the carnivore community, even if you're suffering from SIRS, you have seen a benefit in adding more meat. And it is critical. I mean, in one of the new books I've written, I was doing research on anemia, which is, you know, low iron, it's really rampant in the rest of the world. And to take away meat that can absolve that really quickly, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. And so like meat is healthy. But it's hard to make, and the institutions that control it basically have a stranglehold. So knowing your rancher is one of the only ways to make sure you have it, but it's not portable. And so modern life doesn't really suit itself well to knowing your rancher and taking this highly perishable and bioavailable nutrition everywhere around with you. So that's the not only the niche I'm trying to fill with the portability aspect, but also, you know, just food security wise, where if you have access to your rancher, you know their name, you've met your meat, you've gone to the field where your meat was raised. It's like that kind of connection to your food, I think is so, so important in a world that's more and more fractionated. It's like you go to a field of corn and soy, it's just chemical death. It's just one species. And or you go and you visit your local rancher and you see cows like springing around unburdened with this giant belly full of grains that's not their normal diet. It's not the slow, sad feedlot sick beef. They're almost like big dogs. They're bounding about and they'll play with you. And I know that's a little macabre because we're going to eat them, but at the same time, there's a maturity, understanding the cost of this life that we live, that this health and wellness, the cost of living in a world that is so devoid of nutrition. It's that you have to be even more unlike everyone else around you.
Right.
You have to go the extra mile to find that nutrition. You have to go the extra mile to be informed, to be aware of your environment, like you're finding with SIRS. Like you have to be informed and take ownership of your own health, because no one is going to do it for you. And the more they let us down, the more that responsibility falls on us to take control of our own health and do our best to right the ship.
Yeah, I have a person that works on our team that she was stuck in snow, and for a month they had to eat just whatever they had. And so they lived literally off rice and beans. I think they just, and it was very few nutrition, but they just had no other options. And so when people ask me, if you're afraid of where we're going to source our meat and where can we get shelf stable something, I always recommend either canned foods or I recommend your carnivore bar, because I don't know much else that we can. Because even if we were to stockpile freezer meats, if the electric goes out, what then? Right. Yeah. So like, yeah,
exactly. So it's that red meat that I found that I feel the best on, as same as the high fat. So, you know, to make that, the you can meat, but it's hard and not very good. You know, and you can't use too much fat, because if you use too much fat, it doesn't can correctly.
Yes.
So it's this paradox where we're looking at this ancient technology to try to create a way forward for us, not only so we can get through our busy lives, but also so that we can have some peace of mind.
Yeah. And I also think, what if you don't have a can opener? Like, I just can't help think, if people are becoming such preppers, I think of what is the easiest thing. And I just think of the carnivore bar, you literally just rip it. But
really, thank you. You take a knife. it's brutal, but this has happened to me overseas. Okay. Where we had like tuna and different things.
Oh, right,
we
right.
have some canned fish. Not all of them have that opener. You can get into it, but it's not convenient.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was, I mean, we talked about so many things. Where can people find you? Are you on social media? And then where can people find the Carnivore Bar?
So it's carnivorebar.com. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're a very small company, but we're a part of the community. So
yeah.
Just feel free to reach out. You will probably be talking to me or my wife, Courtney. So,
yeah. And I honestly love both of you so much. I didn't realize that I was talking to both of you. I thought it was possibly your staff, and I realize it's been you. But I just love that you didn't create a product just to sell a product. There was a need for you, and you really need your bar that's unsalted. And I think that is it. There's a lot more heart and passion. And we didn't even talk about the amount of scrutiny you have through the whole process to make sure that there's less histamines and less anything that can make you sick, because you've been there. And so you know that the people that you're servicing are super sick too, so that they need the cleanest, nutrient dense, but not affected by latex, for example, but anything that level, which then can increase the price point. But we didn't even talk about that. But I know how stringent you are in the care of the product. And it's why I don't recommend many products, but I recommend yours, because I work with that population that you're servicing.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you for that.
Well, I'm working with you. So you've seen my labs, you know that I'm sick. It's like, I would die if I didn't do everything I could to make the product clean, down to the glove that we use for our personnel for food safety, down to the way it's stored in stainless steel and silicon. So much goes into every meticulous step, because I would get sick. And that's kind of like your assurance that you won't get SID if you eat it, because I am constantly eating this product myself and I know who I'm making it for, and that it is a life and death situation for a lot of people who have it way worse than I do. And so you can take stock and take faith in that we will do our absolute best.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to, I will pray about it, about reaching, getting this as a swap for MREs, because yeah, I didn't know a lot of what you shared. And so I appreciate you even going out there, but just having that passion to possibly change that for our military men and women. I think it's so key, because these people are parents and children of others, and we want them whole when they come back.
Absolutely. It is really expensive to just do everything through the VA. It's like, right. It would be an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And it all starts with what you eat.
Well, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, guys, I hope that this interview was helpful to you. I hope that the conversation about carnivore not being enough is something that you may want to consider if you've been truly strict carnivore for at least 6 months. If we were to think that seasonings or coffee is the one thing that is making us fully unwell, the logic just defies that to be probably true. Sometimes it's just the cleaning up of the water or the home that we live in. And while that seems a little bit daunting, it is possible to get to root cause healing. If you've never tried the carnivore bar, it is an interesting texture. But if you are in a bind, or if you need a snack, or you need some nutrient-dense foods and you're not near a restaurant or meat or somewhere you can get access to meat-based foods, the carnivore bar is a perfect source of food and nutrient density that you can just carry around. If you have family and friends in the military, I just wanted to take a second and say thank you. I never knew the horrific conditions and nutrient poorness that is in the military. And talking to Philip about it is very sobering. He saw a lot of the uncomfortableness and the stuff that goes on as a medic. If there's any way that we can support our military, that I think we should consider it and really advocate by just sharing about an all-meat carnivore diet and the healing properties of it. And hopefully, maybe the higher-ups will hear the benefits of this so that we can actually protect our country. Okay, guys, make sure to eat a lot of meat, take care of your bodies and your environment, because it's the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my 2 books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.